Hey, Mike.
Hello, Caleb.
What are you drinking tonight?
I am sipping on a Manhattan. How about you?
I'm starting with a Manhattan as well. I've got
starting
some
with.
Well, who knows? I might have to have another. So today was a pretty long day. I woke up really early today.
Yes. What did you? Why were you waking up early?
Well, I went and lined up like a crazy person at a mall. To give $1,000 for something and walk away with nothing.
Was it the Justin Bieber tickets?
Good guess. That was my second option if the first one didn't work out. I actually waited in line for the Model 3.
Oh, nice, nice. How did that go?
It went pretty well. So I've waited in a lot of lines for products. I've gone to more Apple events than I probably should have. From the original iPhone through the iPads and pretty much every iPhone I've waited in line for. So I'm accustomed to that, but usually I go a couple hours early before the store opens and there's usually a handful of people there. But this morning I got there at 8 a.m. So the store's opened at 10 and I was expecting maybe 20 or 30 people and there were 100 people in front of us. And I went with one of our mutual friends who also has waited in a lot of lines. So he brought some chairs. And we went to the Palo Alto Stanford Shopping Center Tesla store, and it was a very calm calm line. There were no people trying to cut or anything like that. But the mall security clearly was not prepared, or Tesla was not prepared for how many people were there, because we were waiting in line, and they came over and over again to get us to move and readjust and, like, slide over. Like, you're blocking exit doors, you're blocking doors. And, like, this was, like, clearly the mall security people's, like, favorite day, because they were in charge and, like, they were setting the tone and, like, telling people what to do.
And this is an outdoor mall.
It's a totally outdoor mall, yeah. And so it was kind of cold. It was a little overcast, and so there were maybe three or four people around us who we were sort of chatting with a little bit, the introverted way that we are, and sort of heard about what they were. You know, most of them worked at tech companies and had been excited about Tesla for a while, and were excited to get into the Model 3. And you know, at this point, none of us had seen it yet, still. And then there were, like, the press was there and wanting to come over. And at one point I was working on my laptop, and like the San Jose Mercury News guy came over and started taking photos of me. And it was really weird and awkward because it was, like, way too long taking photos. And I'm, like, pretending to pose, but being natural, like, and it ended up online and super weird. And so, yeah, we were there for, 2 hours before the store opened, and then it opened, and they had told us there were going to be maybe six or eight people inside processing, because one of the things that you always forget about while waiting in these lines is, like, okay, it opens at 10, great. But that's when it opens, and then everyone in front of you has to actually be processed. So for iPhone time, that can be like hours before, because people don't bring their phones. It's such a pain in the butt.
Right.
So,
and Apple's gotten pretty streamlined about that too. They've gotten down to this, like, paper note system now where they, like, write you down your model number ahead of time. And
yeah, like, they've got little cards and all the stuff. And, like, so,
but they were pretty bad at first.
Yeah. So we were expecting it to be terrible. And, like, the system's going down and all the stuff, like, really prepared for it to be a total mess. I was about to say a swear word and didn't want to get the iTunes explicit tag.
So when you were standing in line, were any of the people that you met already, like, Tesla owners, or was everyone there waiting for their first one?
Everyone that we spoke to, and we spoke to maybe four people, so it's a very, very representative sample, as you can imagine, was not a Tesla owner. And they were a little bit younger, probably late 20s, early 30s. There were a few older folks in front of us, not that old, but, you know.
Silicon Valley old.
Yeah, 50s. Okay. And they had seemed to maybe had a Tesla, but weren't. It wasn't 100% clear what they were going to do with it.
They were on the Tesla DL.
Yeah, I think they, like, didn't want to call it out. Like, there were not many Teslas in the parking lot except for the test drive ones. So once we actually got that, like, we were waiting around, got some coffee, and the pro line tip obviously is going with someone else if possible, so that someone can be to hold your spot in line to go to the bathroom and go to Starbucks and have a chair. And
At the minimum, a plastic bottle.
Yeah, you really, yeah, exactly. You need something. And it was light out at least. So the store opens up. They told us there were 6 or 7 people inside. And so they said it'd be about 30 seconds to a minute to process us. And that sounded like junk. That sounded fake.
Per person or total?
Yeah, that's what they said, per person. I estimated about 1 to 2 minutes per person because they said all you needed was your name, credit card, and like what they ended up having on the form later that night. So it was very low key in terms of the information they needed, and your credit card, obviously. And they would just enter that in on the website. They didn't swipe it. So we actually ended up getting out of there by around 10:30. So about 30 minutes after they opened, they processed about 100 people. So it was quite efficient. There were no major roadblocks or issues. But I have to say it was extremely anticlimactic because we walk, you know, you're about to enter the store, and that's cool. But there's nothing in there. Everything is the standard Tesla store because it wasn't announced yet. There was nothing out there. So you go in.
They don't even have the Model X in the store.
They don't even have the Model X yet, right? Yeah, and so there was no one in there. And it was just like the normal store I had been to for a test drive before. And walk through, and then they're like, okay, cool. Like someone raised their hand like at Whole Foods, like, come on down. You're the next person to give us $1,000.
And did they give you anything out of this?
Gave us nothing, nothing. We walked out with nothing and no email receipt. And it was like the just strangest thing because it was a credit card transaction. It just felt like, you know, when you get the iPhone, you're excited. You've got it in your bag. You know, you've got this little special thing that all these other people want. And this one is like walking out and like you didn't get anything. So I feel like that was a letdown. It does sound like they had intended to give us some little token of appreciation, but apparently they didn't have enough once they realized that their estimates were way under for how many people they expected to wait at the stores. So they ended up not giving anything out.
So you think there's probably like a box of keychains or something out back and they just saw how many people there were and they're like, we're going to have a riot here.
Yeah. So apparently they're mailing those to folks who waited in line as a little token thank you because they had to order more from wherever the hell they got them made. But it was great. The group, everyone in line was really nice. I'm glad I did it because now we know that at least 100,000 people made reservations before the car was like really even shown. So that's pretty insane.
Can we talk about how crazy that is?
So every news article I've seen has said the craziest thing. People are putting down $1,000 for a car they haven't even seen. But that's true, but misses the point. Like, I don't think it's actually crazy at all.
Is it because you have assumptions as to what the car, it's not so much like seeing it as far as what it looks like. You can pretty much guess it's going to look kind of like a smaller version of the S, but like
exactly
what's included with it.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some good information about what's coming, and also the way that the reservation system is set up, and knowing that there was going to be demand, and knowing like where we're at with Model X, with thousands and thousands of people having put down reservations and still waiting for their car, that if you are interested at all in the Model 3 and you have the ability to put $1,000 and not, you know, put down $1,000 and not have access to it for a few years, if you are in that spot, you should have done it. Like the option value of being able to decide when those configuration emails go out saying, please come on, log in and configure your Model 3. At that point, you could still decide to say, nope, I want to walk away. Give me a refund. So the idea of waiting even an extra 24 hours to see what it looked like made no sense to me because I thought I might be interested more than a couple percentage points in possibly getting this car. And we can talk about the fact that I don't even have a car right now at some point. But like that's why it seems so obvious. And also, yeah, that we had already heard that there were going to be a meaningful amount of range, that it was going to be about the size of an Audi A4 or BMW 3 Series, that it was going to be $35,000, and that clearly it was going to be based on a lot of the learnings from the Model S, that it just seemed like there were very few things they could have said tonight that would have made me be like, nope, this is definitely not the car I want. And so
did you have any, like beforehand, did you think of any things that he could have said that would have made you hesitant?
I was thinking about that because I was trying to imagine what it would be. And I think if it was extremely ugly, that could have been something. Like if it was like one of those crazy electric vehicle,
like one of the self-driving Google ones, or
yeah, something wild in the design department could have made me decide not to do it. If they had come out and said, you know what, it's only 50 mile range, that would have been a deal killer for me. But other than that, there's like very, yeah, there's just so little, because I just don't think that they could have done anything that wildly different than a a Model S. And when you look at every other car, Audi, BMW, Lexus, Mercedes, the differences between the model lines to the naked eye are quite minor. And so they are competing in that same market. And so the differences that they could have allowed would have been just so minuscule to not even matter. And I just trust that this car matters a ton to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, most of the differences seem size-based in those ranges. We've got like the 3 is a certain size, the 5, the 7 of the BMWs, and
yeah, exactly. And also, this car matters so much that, of course, they're going to incorporate all the learnings they have and all the sort of things that they've learned along the way from building the Model S, you know, releasing it in 2012 and obviously having designed it 2 or 3 years before then. I mean, we're quite a ways away from when they designed that car originally, that I would expect it to be better. And I think what we ended up seeing is pretty great. So after that event, now the weirdest thing was that we now had to go home and wait and go to work and then wait about 8 hours, 10 hours until this event that they always seem to host at night.
Very late at night, too, on the West Coast.
Yeah, they seem to turn these things into parties for early investors and early owners. Very different than the sort of staid 10 a.m., 9 a.m. press conference that most companies employ, sort of a la the Apple model.
Yeah, you could definitely feel that when you watch the stream. The audience was a little rambunctious, shall we say?
Yeah, a little lit up.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a bunch of drunk dads at homecoming.
Yeah, from everything I've heard, they let the liquor roll pretty loose at those parties, and also usually that they start way later than they're anticipated. So the last time for the Model X, like the final details, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, Elon came on over an hour late from when he was slated to come on stage. So people were just drinking and drinking and drinking, and they don't have that much food at these events. It's just sort of hors d'oeuvres. So all these people are slightly drunk, very late at night, like 8, 9, 10 p.m. Pacific time, and rowdy and excited. And then Elon Musk walks on stage. So this time they started only 5 or 6 minutes later than expected. So if that's any indication of their ability to meet a schedule, they are at least starting with a small token of that, with Elon Musk being able to get on stage relatively on time.
Yeah, they're demonstrating the ability to learn.
Yes, in a very small and somewhat meaningless way, but still kind of nice. Because I don't want to stare at a Tesla screen for an hour waiting for the stream to start.
That's true. The so the guy who announced who came out first to announce it, he was the lead designer of the vehicle. Was that?
Yeah, Franz von Furstenberg.
Okay, I was expecting him to give more of a rundown on something, but he basically just said, "Hi, this is who I am, and let's give it up for Elon."
Yeah, I expected him to talk about the design of the car, since that's his job, to design the cars. But he was just a glorified MC introducing Elon. So I don't know if he was prepared to take up some slack in the event that Elon was, you know, on a rocket ship or something.
So how much involvement do you think Elon has in this stuff?
So what part do you mean? Like the presentation, like Steve Jobs versus Tim Cook style kind of thing?
I mean,
thing?
I guess everything from the presentation through to like the design of the car to his other companies that he's running. Like how much? Maybe this is a topic for a whole other show, actually. Maybe we should just table this.
Yeah, I think we should talk about how Elon Musk runs the most innovative car company and the best private space company simultaneously, and also flirts with the idea of a new mode of transportation called the Hyperloop, as well as a supersonic jet, which he keeps dangling at every time, every opportunity. and five kids, and Solar's chairman of Solar City. So, yeah, he seems to do a lot. He's making us all look really, really good in our jobs and what we do every day.
Well, I mean, you could probably feel a little bit better about your presentation skills, though.
Yeah, so we should talk about that.
What were your impressions?
So Elon Musk, that is his... I've watched a lot of Elon Musk presentations, so I'm quite familiar with his presentation pattern and style. And so when he gets up there, it really reminds me as if he's sort of doing an internal presentation that he forgot about that day. So someone had told him, hey, Elon, today's when we got to tell the rest of the team about what Model 3 is all about. Oh, okay. Does anyone have some slides for me? Yeah, no, we've got some slides. Okay. When's it happening? 5 minutes ago. We're 5 minutes late. Okay, let's go do it. That's what these presentations feel like, where he kind of knows what's going on, but he also really wants to make everyone feel like he knows all the details, but he also sometimes forgets some of the details, and he also will just spiral into like mumbling about stuff. So I don't think he is... I don't think his media handlers are very happy with his presentation style.
Do you think it's part of
somehow he doesn't care?
Yeah. Do you think it's explicitly like part of his brand? Is it deliberate, or is it, does he just not view it as an important thing that warrants his preparation time?
I think he probably believes it's much more important what the content of his statements are than the way that he presents it, and isn't going to spend time in media training to improve the slickness of his presentation skills, because he's actually got some really solid stuff to talk about. And I think they also are sort of surprised at how popular they're getting. Maybe not surprised, but it's just like out of phase with the level of preparation they've had for these sorts of events and presentations. Because I listen also to him on the conference calls that they do, and it's the same. He'll just go off on tangents about stuff that clearly was not vetted by their lawyers to talk about on the conference calls, but he does. I think it just doesn't matter. I don't think he thinks it's an important part of the process yet.
Yeah, I think the yet is the interesting part. Now that he's going into the mass market, is he going to have to kind of walk more over towards the Apple side of things?
What's funny, though, is when you think about other car companies and their presentations, so if you watch them at CES for sometimes, or even at the auto shows, they're so slick to be insipid and fake and bad and just the terrible business person presentation that I think we're pretty spoiled at how good the Apple presentations are, and that at least Elon's presentations are filled with reality and statements of truth, where so many of these other ones are so filled with corporate speak that they're not actually that fun or interesting to listen to. And also, you know, this presentation was really short. I mean, I had a friend text me because his stream cut out, and he thought that the stream that something had broke because it was over so quickly, and thought his Apple TV wasn't reconnecting. And I was like, no, it's actually done. And he thought I was trolling him. So I think it clocked in at like 25 minutes, which I was just expecting to be a lot longer. They covered a fair amount, but not a ton.
It's interesting to contrast it to my first reaction when you said other car companies' presentations was sort of a laugh at, like, I've never even seen another car company's presentation. Like, whoever watches car company presentations, like, it's a unique phenomenon that Tesla has garnered so much attention.
Yeah, totally. I think that, car people will watch them when they're unveiling really big new showpiece cars or concept cars. And sometimes, you know, you'll get to watch that as sort of a video bumper for the car. But it is mostly about showing the car and it being on that spinning platter on the stage, and that's it. And I think also, like, how much unique new information do these car companies have to share about their cars that actually warrant a stage presentation? Because even Apple doesn't tell us when they update the MacBook Pro with a slight CPU boost and memory improvement. That's just reserved for a press release. Right. But only really big new products warrant, you know, the stage.
Yeah, and I guess most most car companies kind of speak to the public through ubiquitous television ads too. Like that seems to be their medium.
Right. And also they have this challenge where they've got all these cars on the market and they don't want the Osborne effect of people buying or delaying purchase of a new car until the new model comes out. And because they have to announce the cars, you know, a year in advance, would be a substantial loss if they actually waited. But for the Model 3, that's not actually a big concern.
Right. And that is something we'll table for a future episode as well, because I would love to hear your thoughts on the Osborne effect as far as it relates to Tesla's Model 3 competitors over the next year and a half or 2 years or longer.
Yes, I've got a lot of data on that I would like to share with the podcast listening audience.
But yeah, to wrap up the thoughts on other car companies too, I think when you bring up concept cars is another sort of it makes me think maybe the Elon off the cuff thing is a little more deliberate, because people are so burned from these seeing years and years and years of these concept cars that always look so cool and so amazing. And I remember growing up, I'd see it in like Car and Driver or Motor Trend magazine, and you'd see these crazy futuristic cars and be like, wow, when I get my license, I'll be able to drive this car. And of course it comes to market like 5 years later and it looks nothing like the concept car. And it's just like year after decade of like seeing these amazing Jetson concept cars that come to market and they look like a slightly tweaked version of the Camry or whatever.
Yeah, I remember the same sort of thing with seeing concept cars that I was like, why can't there be cars that look that good on the road? Like, what is stopping them? Why do they go from being amazingly exciting, everyone loves it, to just a junk box running down the street? And it even happens today with modern, like the Chevy Volt had very interesting original concepts, I thought. And then it just turned into like a Malibu that was, you know, Prius. And
I would say we have at least one, maybe multiple episodes to talk about the Chevy Volt, because yeah, that is an astounding phenomenon.
Yes, we should definitely talk about the Chevy Volt. There's one that's in my complex, and every time I look at it, I'm just shocked that anyone bought it. shocked. It's insane. So back to the announcement, what struck you about the presentation, being someone who, you know, admittedly isn't as much of a follower of Tesla as I am, but is certainly aware of what Tesla is doing, has seen a lot of Model S's, knows people who've driven them. What struck you from the announcement as intriguing or interesting about the Model 3?
Well, my most superficial impression from the announcement was just the fervor in the crowd, like the rambunctious, drunken, loud crowd, people yelling Elon just at random times. And
had you watched any of the other announcements in the past?
I watched the Model X one, and that was not quite as bad, but that one just seemed like people were angry from having to sit there for 2 hours or however long.
So why do you think that stands out to you, though?
I think it was because it was not necessarily synchronized to what was going on. So people cheering when you announce some interesting feature or something was one thing, but this felt like more of like whenever there was a quiet moment or downtime, people were just trying to be heard. Like, you know, in the middle of like two random announcements, someone's yelling, "Elon, we love you," or something like that. And it had this little more of like celebrity sort of effect than like you were at sort of a Justin Bieber record signing rather than cheering because they just announced that it has a 2,000 mile range.
So you would have liked it to be more austere?
I don't necessarily.
With your East Coast heritage?
That's fair. I will concede my bias in this, but I think that combined with the off-the-cuff presentation style, the whole thing just felt a little more frat housey. It had a weird vibe. But, you know, like I said, that's just a superficial reaction to what I was seeing. I was struck by how slick all of the presentation was.
That was a super wide screen. That was sort of interesting.
I found myself wondering what kind of technology was making this incredibly, like, what looked like really high resolution, really wide projections on there. But the quality of it as well was in stark contrast to the kind of off-the-cuff meandering going on with the microphone, where it's almost like he was reacting to some of the slides for the first time or something, just kind of just explaining whatever was up there.
Yeah, I wondered if he actually had a presentation mode in front of him where he could see the next slide, because somehow I think he got ahead of himself on like the supercharger discussion, to jump ahead a bit. But like, I noticed a few, and this is terrible, but nits on the presentation of talking about things that were already like weren't yet on the slides, or talking about things that were previously on slides that he seemed to have advanced. And so it took took the air out of the room when he moved to the supercharger slide, but was still talking about the previous slide for a while. Yeah. And then he's like, "Oh yeah, and supercharging." So I think they definitely, I give them a C- for the presentation, getting me excited about the presentation.
I think what's troubling about it, or what's maybe troubling is not the right word, disappointing about it, is that it's not like they're doing a lot of these, and it's the only announcement they have until for like the next 2 years, really, right? Because they're not going to announce any more models that we know of between now and whenever they do the next like Model 3 is coming announcement. So it seems like it warranted a little more effort, I guess. But maybe this is just a side effect of it being, of it proving like way more popular than they expected.
Yeah, I think they probably, from what they've said and from what Elon Musk has tweeted, and this all could be very being coy, but he tends to be pretty straight shooter, is that they expected maybe 2 to 3 times what they got with the X. So that would have been maybe, you know, a third or something, a quarter of what they got with this. So I think they just had no idea what the latent demand was. And I think that's just an interesting topic either for tonight or for another show of who is interested in the Model 3 and the range of people and the people who don't give a crap that it's an electric car, but just think it's a really cool car and want to support Tesla as sort of this brand, in the most positive sense of the word brand, that they actually like Tesla, and that they don't necessarily like many other cars. I mean, even for me, I don't have a car right now. My last car was a BMW 3 Series late model. It was kind of older, and I sold it. I don't really care. And I thought I'd probably buy another BMW, but I was really hoping to have my next car be a Tesla. And not just an electric car, but a Tesla specifically. And I just don't have a car right now, and it doesn't really matter. But I'm very excited to have the Model 3. And it's less about it being electric and more about it being a really technically excellent car that was designed well and really thoughtful, with software applied. So, yeah, I think they just didn't expect how much attention they'd be getting and how many people would be interested in this vehicle, that if you were to take the charts of how many people should be interested in it based on how many BMWs sell or Audis sell, I bet their projections were probably right. But so many more people turned out to be interested in this. And I mean, that's great news for Tesla, but not so great if you're only finding out about it now and reserving, because you're going to have to wait a long time.
Yeah, it's weird to talk about Tesla as being caught unawares by their popularity, because in the Valley, Tesla is not an uncommon vehicle. You see a lot of Model S's. You saw a lot of Roadsters. You saw a lot of Roadsters that mysteriously disappeared when the Model S came out, but that's probably a topic for another episode.
Yeah, they really stopped.
But it's interesting to see how the rest of the country, and I guess not world, but country, is. I mean, surely if they're pulling in this many reservations, I mean they're coming in from all around the country and not just in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and the world. I mean, they do have reservations open in many countries that they are already selling S's in, and also turned on maybe 8 or 9 more countries for the launch. So,
interesting.
It is world, global, worldly. So, any specifics about the car that stood out to you before we wrap up for tonight, and then come back and talk more about the Model 3, as I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot for the next 2 years?
For me, I think if there's like a design dial for like futuristic car, I think they turned it up a little too high. I think they get a little bit of the sort of Pontiac effect, where they're like just a car that's just trying to look too futuristic. I'm not sold on touch screens in cars, but that's certainly a topic for another episode.
Touch screens in cars.
I guess autopilot changes a lot of this stuff, but like having tactile instruments is when you're supposed to be focusing on the road is an important thing. I would say that's a topic for another episode. Mostly I thought it looked good. I think the grill looks weird.
You mean the anti-grill?
Yeah. It almost looks like, when I was a kid, I would get like model car kits and sometimes like the machine that made them like wouldn't stamp it all the way through. And it kind of looks like the machine that's supposed to stamp the little part where you pop the grill out is just it like didn't fire. And there's just like a big old piece of plastic there where there's supposed to have been like a something cut out of it. So I don't know. I think that's a little bit weird. I think they maybe could have done something to integrate that a little more, especially in like in California, you don't need to have front and rear license plates, but in a lot of states you do need to have a front license plate.
I think you need one in California. You need both.
Do you? I thought the front plate was optional. No?
I think you need it.
Oh,
we should chat about that because I'm very concerned about putting a front license plate on the Tesla.
There doesn't even seem to be anywhere to mount it.
I know. You'd have to drill into that plastic bumper grill thing. It would ruin it.
Yeah, well, we're getting into like concept car territory here where like you're seeing something that's just not a practical thing that they can sell you.
Yeah, that's a little bit frustrating. Hopefully and all the car companies do this where they show the sort of faked license plate in the back so they don't have to muddy up the look of it. Right. And Apple's obviously done this by, you know, hiding a lot of the FCC stuff on the back of the iPhones before they finally got those worked into software in all their promotional photos. The front doesn't bother me so much. I think that it's definitely futuristic.
What struck you about the design?
I was impressed with how sporty and aggressive it looked. I was, you know, the Model S is pretty lozenge-like, pretty bubbly, and I don't quite love that. And I don't love the super, super aggressive BMW, the more modern BMW sort of really deep cut, aggressive body side panel lines and things. But I really liked the look of it. I think the front of it looks great. I think the headlights and headlamp sort of popping out of the top a little bit is very sharp. I love all the glass. The roof and rear glass seems really smart. I don't expect to be a passenger in my car that often, but I still think it's really great. Never liked headliners.
Do you think even in the California sun that glass is going to be great?
I have to think so because they're testing this car and they have that with the S has a big panoramic roof and the X has a ton of glass. And in some of the videos I was watching, they talked about how that's actually a composite glass. It has both UV, 100% UV blocking. It has light reflection and absorption materials in the glass so that apparently only 20% of the heat would actually make it through. And that apparently is very similar to what a metal roof would conduct through it. And also, because they are in LA and testing them in LA, I mean, that's a pretty sunny area. So I think they would know if it was causing too much need for AC with that. So because it's sort of internal materials and not tinting, I think they can get away with it being darker than being a tint, since there are some laws around how much tint cars can have, at least in California, from the manufacturer. But I don't think they would do it unless they thought it was actually a benefit to the overall design of the car. And it does make sense that legitimately there's less things. I mean, one pane of glass is going to be less height than a metal roof with insulation and then a plastic headliner and then fabric on it. So I think it's just a much more essential design to have a single plate of glass above your head. Now, what happens if you roll over and that glass breaks? I'm a little bit concerned, but they also said they want to achieve 5-star safety ratings in every category. And I hadn't really thought about the safety component as being that important to me. I don't currently have any kids, and you know, I never really thought about the safety of my vehicles that much. But now knowing how safe Teslas are relative to other vehicles, I have to say it's actually a much more compelling feature to me. And maybe it's just because I'm also getting a little older. But the idea of a safer car, especially with more autopilot and technology features in the car, makes me feel better. And I think definitely makes you question other cars' safety ratings when they're doing such a great job, and that's just asymmetrical because it is an electric car. There's so many advantages for just beating out safety with similar designs.
So how about the how do you feel about the door handles?
So there were two door handles that were shown. One apparently was an earlier prototype, which was on the gray or the black matte one, which is actually the just Model S door handles, which is where they started from.
Kind of the parallelogram one.
Yeah, and then the new ones, which is sort of the current latest thinking for the handles, are a slight J. And apparently they are sort of pivoting in the center. And so you push on one side, which actually reveals the latch on the J side, and that's where you pull. So I don't know. I haven't felt them yet, so I can't speak too much to them.
As someone who grew up in a cold weather environment, how do you think that would work in a New England winter?
I think you may have to bang the door a bit with ice on them. Yeah, that seems a little tricky. Or with large mittens, that might be tough.
Yeah, I remember in the 80s, cars kept coming up with all these different door handle designs, and they all ended up reverting to something more standard because they would just freeze.
Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone listening actually has a Model S in the East Coast and the freezing sleet or ice storms, those auto presenting handles, I'm really curious how well they deal with them being sort of snowed in, because those actually protrude. The Model S ones protrude when you approach the vehicle.
Yeah.
And I know that was a really big, that was one of the things that apparently Elon Musk was very adamant about early on, was that the door handles be flush. And apparently the story behind that is that when they were designing the Model S originally, they had the clay models and they didn't have any door handles cut out of it because they were still in the pretty early stages. And they got very attached to the idea of the car being that smooth. And then they put the door handles on and he had a fit that these door handles were terrible and destroyed the lines, and that they needed to find a way to make them flush. And so they put a lot of work into making those flat door handles work. So it appears they're going to keep that, which I think is cool. And I don't see that many people complaining about the door handles on the forum, the Tesla forums, that much. But I can't speak to them beyond a few test drives I've done of the Model S, and it was actually a non-issue because they were out when I was close enough to the car to open them. So this was in California, so yeah, they weren't frozen in.
Well, and I suppose if you're plugging your car in, that's probably going to be indoors too, which might help.
Yeah, I think that's it. And the other big thing that I was actually pretty excited about was that it will have autopilot hardware. And I didn't expect it not to. I expected they would have autopilot hardware built in, but it was a wild card, and I thought it might potentially be an option. So I know it's very likely to be an option to use it, but I thought it might be a hardware option where they might not even include it for cost-saving purposes on the very base model. So that's pretty cool, and I think just signals, again, how interested Tesla is in making autopilot and autonomous driving a sort of tentpole component of the company, because this would be the time to cut it if it was sort of just a diversion or just interesting but not substantive to the sort of master plan. And I think a lot of people underestimate how important autopilot's going to be to Tesla, and that it's most likely, in my view, their most defensible asset against other car makers. It's not the electric drivetrains. It's not the batteries. It's autopilot. And we should talk about that another time. But
yes,
I'm very excited about that. And I've used autopilot, and it is incredible. I every time I drive now, admittedly, it's not that often, but I want autopilot. And that's the thing I'm most excited about for the Model 3.
Yeah.
Is being able to have a Tesla, first and foremost, being able to afford one. And as a result of that, having autopilot. And that's it. And it being quiet. Those are the three things.
Yeah, I think autopilot's the self-driving is the one thing that'll probably get me to buy a car again. I do. Yeah, and I think we definitely need to go into that in a future episode, because I think there's an interesting tension between cars that can drive themselves and the sporty aspects of the Tesla, where who really cares how sporty the car is if it's just driving itself around at the speed limit? And
yeah,
I think there's an interesting trade-off there.
Well, and I think also you started to see the backlash against the interior design of the Model 3, both the focus on that 15-inch LCD touchscreen mounted centrally, and the lack of an instrument panel with speedometer and information in front of the driver's line of sight, as well as the extremely minimalist dashboard and dash experience, I think is revealing those folks who like cars because they're machines and burly and exciting and fun to drive, and those who like cars because they're futuristic transport machines. And I think that Elon Musk and Tesla are much more on the idea that these are futuristic transportation machines than vehicles that care about the history of cars. And I think that's upsetting some people because ultimately Teslas and Model S's have been some of the best performing sedans in the world. And so they actually beat so many gasoline vehicles that de facto they've attracted a lot of people who traditionally would have been very excited about driving an extremely fast car, extremely fast. And that going forward, I don't think that's their goal. I think that that's a happy byproduct of being an electric car, and they've sort of been excited about the engineering capabilities of being able to design such a fast car and not really try that hard when all these other cars have to try really hard to fit those huge horsepower engines into those vehicles. But to your point, I don't think you need to be able to go 0 to 60 in 2 seconds if your car is driving itself, because that would wake you up or cause you to fall off the back of your seat if you're facing the wrong direction. So I think we'll be cruising at very high speeds eventually, but I don't think we'll be getting to those high speeds at breakneck paces.
Yeah, and you can see Google taking that to the extreme with their Ladybug self-driving prototypes they've got on the road in Mountain View.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that thing doesn't even top out above 25 miles an hour. So that's the ultimate grandma car, and no offense to grandmas. But yeah, that's just like the total utilitarian view. And, you know, the speed limit in every city is 25 miles an hour in the city streets. So it's fine. But yeah, I mean, what good is a Model S ludicrous in New York City rush hour traffic?
Unless you're a bank robber.
Yeah. Or, I mean, then you need to be able to crawl over the vehicle. So you kind of want a monster truck.
I feel like this is the true test for Tesla as a luxury or high performance brand, is if they can make it into bank heist movies or rap videos, or like, how is their penetration in the Hollywood world?
I think they're not doing so great there yet. The best bet is, I know they're in almost every video game, racing game now at this point, also on the iPhone games. And they also now are in the little toy flyer car world, where instead of having a little wagon and little drive-on car, you can now have a little drive Tesla that your kid can have. So they are now in the toy space as well, and licensing Model S to that. So 4 and 5 year olds around the world are starting to dream about having those cars, which is actually another topic I want to talk about, was car advertising, because Tesla isn't doing any advertising yet, but you know, auto advertising is one of the largest segments of advertising in the United States, and I think globally in terms of spend. And it's one of the really interesting brand advertising plays, because you build the desire for a BMW or a Mercedes from a very early age, and seeing those luxury vehicles over and over and over again and being told that they're luxury vehicles has been what's kept them there. And what Audi did over a decade period in the late 90s to become a luxury brand in the US is a really interesting case study. But ultimately, Tesla has done none of that advertising today. And what'll be interesting is the Model 3 goes outside of year one or two and their initial 500,000 or so production run. Where is that incremental extra 100,000 car a year sales going to come from? And is it just seeing it on the road, or are they actually going to start advertising? And what would Tesla's advertising be in the context of all these other vehicles advertising mostly local dealership specials? Well, I think my drink is finished on my end, so I think that's a good time to call it quits, because I need to get another one.
All right.
Well, this has been fun. Until next time.
All right. Until next time.